Brilliant novels, groundbreaking nonfiction, evocative poetry, great books, and insightful conversations whenever you want them on the Talk of Iowa Book Club podcast. Pick the books that speak to you or read them all. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, we'll talk about combating climate change in Linn County with the county's first ever sustainability program manager. But first, the game of chess is more than 1,000 years old, but it's a game that continues to evolve and fascinate. It has never not been somewhat popular, but right now it seems to be having a moment. More than 62 million people have watched the Netflix show The Queen's Gambit, and the game of chess is one of the stars of the show. During the holiday season, chess sets were sold out, and many people have found themselves dusting off old sets and connecting online to try their skill. This hour, we are going to talk about chess in Iowa. With me, Eric Vigil, president of the Iowa Chess Association. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, it's great to be here. I've been a public radio supporter for years.
Oh, that's great to hear. Also with us this hour, Heidi Pierce, Women and Girls Coordinator for the Iowa State Chess Association. Hello, Heidi.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. And Eric, I'm going to start with you. I want to hear about your personal story with chess. When did you first start playing?
I started playing in grade school. For us, our family would get together, you know, in the holidays, and we would play chess and other games. Mostly, you know, we didn't have, like, you know, video games or anything. Like, the internet wasn't there. So we sat around and played a lot of games, and chess was one of them. And then when Bobby Fischer became the world champion, my dad had us join a chess club for a couple of years. But it was kind of like when I was, like, in first grade. I don't really remember much of it, but I just remember going to this chess club at the Langendorf Park in Barrington, Illinois. And then we just, like, continued to play. I became involved in tournament chess, or, you know, official chess, I guess what you call it, when my son Barry went to the Weber Chess Club at Weber Elementary in Iowa City. And one of his best friends, Vladimir, was a chess player, and then Barry wanted to join, and then I ended up volunteering for the club. And then beyond that, I started going to tournaments. And then since all my kids were playing, I figured it would be a great family activity that I would join in as well.
Well, and you mentioned Bobby Fischer, who won the World Chess Championship back in 1972, and that just rocketed him to worldwide fame. Can you give us an idea of what the hoopla was like around Bobby Fischer back in the 70s, Eric?
Well, when Bobby Fischer won, I mean, the whole thing was that the Soviet Union, who was, you know, the arch enemy of the United States, had been, ever since World War II, had been sending their kids to a mandatory chess education. And they were, like, the best. They had been the world champions of chess since the 1940s. And then when Bobby Fischer was able to win, it was a great patriotic boost because nobody in the world had been able to beat the Soviets until he. And then when he did it, I mean, it's the same sort of thing. Chess sets flew off the shelves. And then chess became really popular in the United States.
Everybody thought they might be the next Bobby Fischer at that point.
Yeah.
So, Heidi, tell me about your experience with chess. When did you first start playing?
Well, I remember being about 3 or 4 years old and watching my dad play with my uncles. And I remember they didn't really teach me how to play, but I just kind of figured out how the pieces moved at that time. And then one of my uncles started getting involved in competitive chess and would tell me about the tournaments he went to. It sounded pretty fun, but I was really busy with school and work. And so I didn't really get into it until my son started playing when he was in second grade. And my story is kind of similar to Eric. When I was going to all of the chess tournaments And, you know, they're all day long, sometimes on a Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. I decided I wanted to get more involved and start with some coaching. And then I started playing, and I just absolutely love it. So I started playing in some tournaments as well.
What do you think it is about chess that you love so much, Heidi?
Well, I'm actually a psychologist, and so I have done a lot of research into some of the benefits of chess. And so not just for myself, but for everybody who plays. For very young kids, they learn some social skills like turn-taking and sportsmanship. They learn impulse control because they learn you shouldn't just take a piece because you can. Taking that one piece might be a trap that puts you in checkmate on the next move. So they can maybe generalize that to other areas of life. It helps with focus and attention and concentration. Watching young kids as they play each other, when one loses, they might be upset. And so then watching the winner actually comfort that child, it's just really beautiful.
Eric, what do you think it is that you love about chess? I mean, it's been a lifelong love affair.
I really love the cerebral content of it. Like sitting there trying, like you're engaged in like a struggle, it's like a really big puzzle. And you know, when I was growing up, like playing with my brothers, like I remember sitting at a coffee house in Carbondale, Illinois with my brother, John, and we sat there and we thought about a move, and then we'd have another cup of coffee, and we ended up closing the coffee house down without finishing the game. We were just so fascinated, just making, you know, one move after another that we'd try to, put the other, I'd like to try to put my brother into checkmate or get the advantage. And there's just so many different like combinations to it. The one thing that, you know, I found like when running, you know, Scholastic chess clubs is that it really attracts, produces smart kids. I think it hits the part of the brain that also works with other, you know, foreign languages and music. And I think that just, you know, it really stimulates me.
Well, and it's a game that is, you know, of course, chess masters or grandmasters are called masters, but it strikes me that it's a game that you never can really conquer. Is that how you feel, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, when I see myself struggling, trying to learn new ways and, you know, a new opening or something, I also notice that the grandmasters themselves are also still learning. So,
Yeah. Heidi, what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I totally agree. I'm a lifelong learner, and so the ability to just keep learning and keep playing is something that attracts me to the game. I prefer playing in person, but with COVID, that hasn't been possible, so I've started playing some online chess. And so what's really nice about that is that you can kind of match up with someone who is the same ability level as you, and you can play at any time of the day or night. There are people worldwide on this website, and so you can just keep practicing and keep learning forever.
Eric, can you give me an idea? Obviously, you've been involved with the Iowa State Chess Association for quite some time now, and give me an idea of the chess world in Iowa. How many people are involved in this?
A couple of years ago, we had about 200 members that have joined the Iowa Chess Association. But Iowa's got a really unique history with chess. The first world champion, a recognized world champion, actually lived in Iowa.
Wow.
His name was Louis Paulsen. He was a German man that settled in Dubuque. That he was regarded as the world champion. He ran a chess journal out of Dubuque, and he worked with his brother at a trading post. He went back to Germany during the Civil War. Throughout the years, you know, kind of around the turn of the century, it was more of an aristocratic, wealthy man's game. Up until like the time of Bobby Fischer, where it became a really more of an egalitarian sort of thing. And the other thing that strikes me, too, is that when the U.S. Chess Federation was formed, the first rule book was written by a man in Waterloo, John Osnes, and he was given a shout-out during the Queen's Gambit. When Beth Harmon stole her first chess magazine and she was flipping through the pages, there was a list of players that came out that, you know, that the camera focused on, and John Osnes was center in the page, which, you know, kind of made me feel Iowa proud.
Yeah.
So when you say about 200 members of the Iowa State Chess Association, does that include kids who would be competing in tournaments? I mean, do you have to be a member to be a part of that network?
The Iowa Chess Association really kind of puts out like a championship series. Like we have the state championship, which this last year was, we had an 11-year-old playing in the state championship. So kids are like a majority of the members. We also have a series of like scholastic tournaments. Like we crown the best high school player, the best junior high player, best girl, best elementary player, and they have the opportunity to then go and play the other 50 states, being, you know, the Iowa best Iowa player versus the best New York player, et cetera. We also do that for the seniors, senior chess, and there's a lot of senior members too. And we put out, like we said, we put out a quarterly magazine called En Passant. And we pretty much organize most of the tournaments here in Iowa.
Well, we'll find out more about the chess world in Iowa in just a couple of minutes. Chess is having a moment right now. With me, Eric Vigil, president of the Iowa Chess Association, and Heidi Pierce, women and girls coordinator for the Iowa Chess Association. You are also welcome to join our conversation if you're an Iowa chess player. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.com. And of course, a lot of this interest in chess right now is because of the hit Netflix show, The Queen's Gambit. And The Queen's Gambit show was based on a book written by Walter Tevis, who is a graduate of the Iowa Writers Workshop. It's also the book we're reading for the Talk of Iowa Book Club in February. So read along with us and join us for an on-air conversation on February 16th. This is Talk of Iowa.
If you own a business or run an organization, consider using IPR as part of your marketing strategy. Let us show you how to reach our loyal radio audience, advertise on our digital platforms, and even sponsor your favorite podcast. Spread the word about your business and support IPR at the same time. It's a win-win. Learn more at iowapublicradio.org/sponsors.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we're going to talk about combating climate change in Linn County with Linn County's first ever sustainability program manager. Right now, we are talking about chess. And with me is Heidi Pierce, Women and Girls Coordinator for the Iowa State Chess Association, and Eric Vigil, President of the Iowa State Chess Association. And we were getting an idea of really the how chess works in Iowa with the Chess Association and the tournaments that are held. And Heidi, I want to move to you. I know that you got involved in this tournament life. And in our school clubs, we see a lot of boys, we see a lot of girls, but chess has always been a male-dominated game, and that does seem to continue to be the case. What is it like to be a woman in the chess world?
Well, I think that one of the reasons that males tend to dominate in this field is it does really require a competitive nature, and I definitely do not have a competitive nature. I'm more of a cooperative person. So, you know, I actually enjoy games more when I lose, if I'm playing against little kids especially. And I think of this one time I was playing at the Iowa Open, and it's an all-ages chess tournament. So I was playing against children, and I played against a little boy and won, and he cried, and he left the room. and he went to his mother for comfort. And when I left the room, his mom and a whole group of other moms were staring at me like I was a monster for winning this game against this little kid. And I do think gender played a role in that situation. I think if it was a man who had beaten that little boy at the chess game, I don't think there would have been the same response.
Interesting. Very interesting. Well, and a lot of parents play chess with their kids. There's actually a bracket where there can be a parent-child team, right, Heidi?
Yes, that's correct. And actually, that's one of the things that Eric and I have implemented into the Iowa Open just the past couple of years, where we have a mom and child category where we add the number of games won by the child to the number of games won by their mom. And so the dyad with the highest score then would win in that category and get a trophy.
So a mom and child, is there a dad and child category too? Are they
so
separate?
What's interesting, they've always had a parent-child category, but when we look at those, I was often the only mom that was playing in those parent-child categories. It was often dads, very rare for a woman to be there. So we thought that if we had a special category for mom and child, that might encourage more women to go into the tournament.
How's it working?
It was kind of a slow start. And like I said, we've only done it a couple of years, but the moms who have participated have said that they had a lot of fun.
So give me a pitch for a mom who might not, I mean, having a lot of other moms stare at you because you beat a child doesn't sound very fun, Heidi. So convince me that I might want to do this.
Well, here's what I think. I think if your daughters see you playing chess and if your sons see you playing chess, then they will start to internalize this idea of gender equity and that any person can achieve any goal they have. Another reason why I like to play chess and do it competitively is because I also want to show not only my children, but really other people's children and people of all ages that you don't have to be the best at something to compete and to have fun doing it. So I have fun, even though I know I'm not the most skilled person at the tournament. That's what helps me grow. I learn so much from the games I lose and the mistakes that I make.
Eric, you mentioned earlier that there was this sort of elitist quality to chess for a long time. I think that there still is an elitist quality to chess. I have to say that I think it can be really intimidating to a lot of people to think about entering this world. And maybe not so much for children and chess clubs, but for adults who may have a harder time being vulnerable. So what do you do to make this world more welcoming?
Well, here's the thing. It really is very welcoming. You just don't know it. I joined the U.S. Chess Federation in the 1990s, and I only did it to get the magazine so that I could beat my friend Michael Richards at the Java House because I would study the magazines just so I could get a little bit better. But in the back of the magazine, there was all these tournaments that were advertised, and a lot of them were at the IMU right down the street. But I was so afraid of going to the tournaments and being beaten being beaten and being humiliated that I never showed up for the next 20 years until I started, with the Scholastic clubs. But once I did, that's where one of the favorite things that Heidi tells me is growth mindset. And you find out that when you lose a game, losing is learning. I once hosted Claudia Munoz, the female or the girls champion of the United States. I had her come to the Iowa Opens again to encourage more women to participate in chess. And when she won that tournament, she lost her first game against somebody incredibly lower rated than she was. But like I said, she then gave a lecture on losing is learning. And that's the thing is once you get into a tournament and you lose a game, what we do is record our moves so that you can replay the game and learn from your mistakes. And the person who beat you will come out after the tournament. I mean, after you finish your game, they'll come over and you can go over the game together And it builds a really strong sense of camaraderie in that you're not really winning or losing, you're playing. And then, again, with the tournaments, there's competition. Like Heidi says, she can get on online and play at somebody that is her level. So there are tournaments where you play people that are higher level than you and lower level than you, but then there's also the playing people. There's people of all different skill levels throughout the tournaments. And when you think about it, and the chess community is very welcoming. You know, and when you start playing, people will take you under their wing and, like, go over their games. It's a fascinating thing where you think that it's not, but it truly is.
Okay. I'll trust you. Heidi, did you have something to add?
Yes, I do. I really agree with Eric, and it's so beautiful to watch the children, who might be, for example, in my son's class, there were three little boys who were all probably the top kids in Iowa in that grade level. And so some tournaments, one of them would win, and the next tournament, somebody else might win. So these three boys were basically competing with each other at every tournament, and they would play together in between the games and run around and have fun. And like Eric said, go over the games afterwards and say, this is where you made a mistake, or maybe you should try this move next time. So it's really a cooperative feel that they become friends and almost like families. And so, you know, we might take each other's kids to chess tournaments if a parent has a conflict and they can't go to the tournament. But there really is this sense of togetherness and joy, and we're all working for this common good.
We are talking about chess in Iowa this hour. You are welcome to join the conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We have this email from Deborah. She says, there's a community of blind chess players in this country and around the world. I do not belong, but should if I had enough confidence. I love learning the various openings, and the lore of chess in literature is wonderful. The Children of Willesden Lane, a book about the Kinder transport children in World War II, features a blind child who grew up to become quite a celebrity in Britain. I could go on and on. So a chess fan, although Deborah, I think Eric is telling you that it's time to try your hand at playing with others, because it's a welcoming community. Eric, one of the things that in reading The Queen's Gambit, you're introduced to, if you're not already familiar with the chess world, you're introduced to a lot of these different openings and strategies for winning a game of chess. And it's pretty intimidating to learn about how many different kinds of openings and defenses and all of these different things that are out there and have been studied so deeply. And then on the other hand, there's this sort of instinctive quality to chess where a player with incredible intuition can be a very powerful player. And Heidi, you mentioned being beaten by a young child who may have had a little bit of intuition and a little less knowledge of the Sicilian. So, Eric, how much do you need to know to start playing chess?
You really, you know, starting off with chess, like I say, there's every level. But as you keep learning, one of the things that I bought the magazine for was because my friend, I noticed that he played a particular series of moves, which I found out was called the Tory Attack, which is a variation of the Queen's Gambit. You play d4 to start. But what I did was then look at what the grandmasters play. So when you're doing an opening, it usually is about a series of 3 to 4 moves before you really should go off the opening, what the grandmasters would play. So you really only need to know 3 to 4 moves to start. And then pretty much then it's tactics. It's that intuition you talk about. If I move here, then they can capture my knight, but then I can capture their queen. So it sets up a little trap or something. So really, you know, you kind of get into it, and then as you progress, if you want to learn more, if you want to learn more, there's so much out there to learn. But yeah, I mean, you're going to, and if you want to get more than that, you can hire a chess coach or, you know, beyond, but there's just learning at every level.
Well, and I have a friend who posted on Facebook the other day a funny anecdote. He had never actually played his son in chess before. He had been a chess player, and his son said, "Oh, let's play a game." And so they did, and his son beat him soundly because apparently he'd been watching YouTube videos about different chess strategies. So there are lots and lots of ways to get this information these days. I do want to get to the phones. Roland is on the line in Spencer. Hi, Roland.
Yes, thank you.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
Our librarian, we've got two grandchildren and younger, and our librarian introduced us to a chess game called No Stress Chess. I don't know if anybody's ever familiar with it, but it's really a good way for younger kids. It has a deck of cards, and it limits the number of moves that you have to consider, and it makes it... it makes it kind of interesting for the younger kids.
Oh, nice. An easier way to get involved. Heidi, have you encountered that?
Yes, actually, I use the No Stress Chess game when I'm working with kids who do not even know how to move the pieces. So during the summer, I have a chess club for kids, and we hire a coach, and I work with the beginners, and the coach works with the kids with more experience, and so the No Stress Chess is a really great game to teach kids the basics.
All right. Craig is also on the line. He's in Denver, Iowa. Hi, Craig.
Hi. This is just a quick comment. I'm glad to hear you talking about that. In 1970s, I taught mathematics in the West High School in Waterloo and had kind of a gaming activity in my classes, and some kids came up to me and wanted to compete at a state tournament in Des Moines, which was a two-day event, 3 days on Saturday and 3 days on Sunday. So I said, sure, I'd sponsor them. And I went down to my principal, Harold Burston was the principal then, and talked to him about it as far as the issues behind the school-sponsored event. And he came back to me a day later, and he said, hey, listen, we're going to sponsor this in terms of taking money out of our athletic fund, a sponsor going down to Des Moines, and we stayed at the YMCA down there. Some of you out there will know what I'm talking about. Well, as it turns out, the long and short of that, I had about 50, 60 kids in a chess club at West back then. There was, about 9,000 students at West High School then, I think. And anyway, we took third in the state at that tournament to Roosevelt of Des Moines, who won.
The underdogs.
Now, the neat thing
really
about this whole thing was that I was excited about it because the winning team got to go to New York to a national tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So I was hoping we could win that, and we didn't. We got third, but Roosevelt of Des Moines went and competed at the nationals that year, and I think they were like fourth in the nation back then.
Wow. Well, Craig.
Well, that continued on, and I helped set up a league in the metropolitan area. There was eight schools, including Cedar Falls and East High School and Columbus, and we had chess matches for many years between the schools, and we held a tournament at another quick story. We held a tournament at
Craig,
West High
School. You know
what?
We are almost out of time. I'm gonna have to let you go, Craig. But thank you so much for sharing. And those were clearly heady times back in the 70s when a lot of people were very excited about chess. Bobby Fischer had really set the world on fire. We only have about a minute left. I did want to spend some time talking to both of you about the prison chess team that you have coached together over the years. But I'm afraid we're gonna have to save that for another day. But with about 30 seconds left each, tell me, Eric, why anyone should pick up a chess set today?
It's a great thing to improve your mind and keep your mind sharp in your old age, whether beginning or old. I would say.
And I shouldn't be intimidated to give it a try. Heidi, what do you think?
It is fun. It's a way to connect with family and friends. just try it.
So with this moment that chess is having, with so many people getting excited about it, it's also in the middle of a pandemic, so chess tournaments are not happening face-to-face. Heidi, what do you hope comes out of this?
Well, this is a way to build online community. One of my friends did do just a mini chess tournament on chess.com, and it was pretty fun. So it's a way to find new ways to connect with people playing chess.
Well, Heidi Pierce, thank you so much for being here today. And Eric Vigil, thank you.
Thank you, Charity.
Eric Vigil is president of the Iowa State Chess Association. Heidi Pierce, a women and girls coordinator for the Iowa State Chess Association. And again, I want to mention that The Queen's Gambit by Walter Tevis is the book we're reading for the Talk of Iowa Book Club in February. There's still time to get a copy of the book and read along with us. We'll be discussing it on the air on February 16th. You can find out more information on our website. And also, please subscribe to the Talk of Iowa Book Club podcast. Coming up in just a moment, we'll talk about combating climate change in Linn County. This is Talk of Iowa.